Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas on Wednesday, December the 7th. And welcome to our commentary. Of course, whenever you say December the 7th, you're thinking about 1941, December the 7th, the attack on Pearl Harbor, one of the most consequential days, if you will, of the 20th century. Of course, what makes this anniversary interesting is that it's been 81 years. So nobody who was there that day, I shouldn't say nobody, but very few of the people who were living and remembering that day and who heard the news or whatever are still around today. I mean, just think about it. If you were 20 years old on December the 7th, 1941, you are now 101. So there just aren't that many of those people around. There are some veterans of D-Day who do show up in some of the parades and all of that, but that's, you know, D-Day is 78 years ago, so you still have a few more of those. But when it comes to Pearl Harbor, the number keeps shrinking and shrinking. But we do honor the men and women who were involved on Pearl Harbor Day, 1941. It was really a traumatic experience for the country. And by the way, I have a post about this. We recorded several years ago a podcast with Barry Jacobson, military historian. And we went back and we looked at the country 81 years ago. The country was not ready for this. The country was not ready for the attack. Most people were not in favor of getting involved in what they call the European War, because at that time, of course, Germany and England and France and all those countries were fighting in Europe, and Japan was running all over the Pacific. But the United States was isolated, and most people in the country did not want to get involved in these wars. But on December 7th, 1941, everything changed. And that was the beginning, or at least the American participation in World War II. So check out my podcast. I have it all up on my blog. And it's always interesting to go back and talk to Barry about some of these historical moments from his military historian perspective. Well, today we're going to talk about Georgia, the post-analysis, the post-election analysis, because I am angry with what happened in Georgia, very angry. Here you have one of the most conservative states in the Union electing two of the most liberal senators in the Senate. So, I mean, it's just crazy. How does that happen? How does Georgia elect a couple of liberals? How does that happen? How is that possible? Well, it's possible because a lot of Republicans, I guess, didn't vote. Look at some of these numbers that have come out. This is remarkable to me. Senator Warnock was reelected by about 1.5 points. It was like 51-49, not exactly 2 points, but between 51 and 49, a point and a half, something like that. There was not a landslide, not a mandate kind of election. It was a very close election. And Herschel Walker should get some credit for making it a close election. A lot of the experts thought that he would lose by 3, 4, even more points. But he made it close, and he should get credit for that. But look at some of these numbers, because this is astonishing to me. The governor of Georgia was reelected a month ago by 7 or 8 points. Lieutenant governor by 7 or 8 points. The attorney general by 7 or 8 points. So if you look at all of the Republicans who ran for the state, for some state office, a month ago, they were all reelected easily. Not a single one of them had to go to the runoff, except the Senate. So you have to ask yourself, how does that happen? How do the numbers happen to make that possible? Well, the answer is very simple. A lot of Republicans didn't vote for Herschel Walker. I mean, it's the only explanation. And even in some of the counties that were supposed to be Republican counties, they didn't turn out. Now, I don't know whether that's because of the runoff. You know, people are exhausted from election, talk about election and ads and everything else. People get exhausted. But the Democrats were not exhausted. They turned out. So why? Why did so many Republicans not vote? Look, I think we can speculate, but I'm going to, you know, tell you that I think probably had something to do with Herschel Walker, many Republicans just not wanting to vote for him. Now, I don't know I don't understand that, because it was a choice between Herschel Walker and Ralph Warnock. It was not a choice between two perfect people. And if I'm living in Georgia, I'd rather have a 50-50 Senate than a 51-49 Democrat majority, even though it's small. So I don't understand people who said, I'm not going to vote for Herschel Walker. I'd rather have Ralph Warnock as my senator, even though I don't agree with him on anything. So I don't get that. But that apparently is what happened. A lot of Republicans did not vote. Some of the Republican counties did not turn out for Walker the way they turned out, let's say, for Governor Kemp, who had a pretty good reelection a couple of weeks. Now, some of the other things that you're hearing is that the Republicans have to get better at early voting. That's true, but that was not the case in Georgia, because in Georgia, as I say, early voting did not help the Democrats for the first time around, for the regular election. So, I mean, I don't understand why all of a sudden that was a problem for Republicans. Governor Kemp had no problems getting his votes out, but apparently Herschel Walker did. So early voting is something we're going to have to do a better job of in other places like Michigan and Pennsylvania, perhaps, Wisconsin, perhaps. But I don't see where that was a factor in Georgia. The reality is that many Republicans did not want to vote for Herschel Walker. That's a shame, but that is the truth. Now, the other question is the question of money, that Ralph Warnock had all this money, like sometimes three or four times more money than Herschel Walker. Again, I don't understand how that happens. Now, I know that as an incumbent, you normally have a lot more money as an incumbent. But still, we have lots of money in the Republican Party. I mean, how does a Republican candidate doesn't have enough money? That just doesn't make any sense to me. Well, the answer is people were not willing to write him checks because they didn't think he was going to win. I don't know any other answer other than that. I mean, look, I understand that the incumbent is always going to have more money. But still, this was a very competitive race. This is the race that the Republicans should have won. Herschel Walker should have been able to win this race despite all his shortcomings. If Republicans had turned out 50 or 60,000 votes different between them, there were many more Republicans than that in Georgia who didn't show up to vote. So I can tell you that I'm very disappointed. Now, at the end of the day, it's 51-49. They don't have the 60 votes to get anything done. So it's a majority, yes. And it could be a factor when it comes to reconciliation, when it comes to judges, yes, in that sense, it could be a factor, and they could put some judges in and undo some of the work that President Trump had done with the judges. But nothing big is going to happen because the House is controlled by the Republicans, and whatever gets through the Senate is not going to get through the House. So it's not going to be the next couple of years are not going to be very productive from the standpoint of anything happening. But it is still amazing to me looking at it in retrospect, it's amazing to me that Georgia is represented in the Senate by two of the most liberal senators in the country. How does that happen? Because people don't vote. That's the only explanation. There were more Republicans than Democrats in Georgia, but at least on this election day, there were more Democrats who voted. And that is something that is beyond explanation as far as I'm concerned. Well, there's a lot of talk about Twitter and what's going on in Twitter. I think to me the big story is the involvement of the FBI and what exactly is the FBI doing with Twitter and Facebook. And that's something that probably we're not going to get to the bottom of that until there's an investigation in the House. And hopefully that'll come in the next 60 to 90 days. But the idea of the FBI telling a social media organization not to run a story, that is something that I think should worry most of the people who are interested in understanding the role of the FBI in our society. That's not their job. If they have a concern about something, they need to go to the Attorney General. They need to go up the chain and tell somebody up the chain what is going on. But they don't go directly to a company and talk like that to a company. That's not the job of the FBI. That's not what their job their job is. Just a quick note, I have a post over at the American Thinker Wednesday morning talking about President Biden and the fact that he did not go to the border. I think that was a huge mistake by President Biden, and it really shows his disconnect from reality. He said he was too busy right now, had other things going on. Well, that's crazy. He doesn't have a lot of other things going on, certainly not more important than this one when you have a chaotic situation on your border. So whatever he's doing, whatever he's working on, it's not that important. He needs to get to the border at the very least. He needs to show some support for the men and women who are down on the border. Thank you for listening. Don't forget to catch my podcast on Pearl Harbor. It was very interesting. We recorded it back in 2016, but it's still very relevant today, several years later. Thank you for listening. Have a great day. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, wishing you a great day.